This is Devin Golden with Mesothelioma Guide, and I have on the phone Dr. Daniel Sturman. He's the Director of Pulmonary Critical Care and Sleep Medicine at New York University Langone Health, and his specialties include lung cancer, lung metastasis, and mesothelioma. He's also a professor with New York University Department of Cardiothoracic Surgery and a professor of Pulmonary and Critical Care Medicine. Dr. Daniel Sturman, thank you for joining us. I know that you are leading a current phase 3 clinical trial for pleural mesothelioma patients, and we're going to talk a lot about that, but I just wanted to thank you. I appreciate you joining us to talk about mesothelioma treatment and your work in the field.
Glad to be with you today.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about this this clinical trial that I know that you are leading and that you have a large role in. It's was described on a conference call last week that I was on that you were talking about. It's a gene therapy clinical trial for pleural mesothelioma patients. But after doing a little bit of research, I mean, it involves a lot of different types of treatment. It involves a kind of form of virotherapy. It involves, I've heard it described as immunotherapy as well as gene therapy. Can you kind of give a brief summary of what this clinical trial involves so that meso patients
sure.
can understand?
So yeah, absolutely. And let me give me a sense of your audience so I know who I'm speaking to.
So it's 99% mesothelioma patients and their loved ones. So it's a lot. It's people who are recently or long ago diagnosed who are likely undergoing treatment with chemotherapy. Maybe they've had surgery. Or they haven't had any treatment whatsoever, and they're new to the disease. They just found out that they have the disease, and they're kind of immersing themselves in all of their options. And I know because there's such limited, and people who newly have the disease are going to learn, there's such limited treatment options for them. It's basically you have two types of surgery, you have two chemotherapy drugs, and maybe radiation as a second line treatment, and that's kind of it. And then the humanitarian use device that was recently approved. So I think knowing more about treatments that are in test is important for patients, especially because they can possibly enroll in this clinical trial if they fit the qualifications. So that's kind of the target
Thank
audience
you.
That we have.
Very helpful to me because it can get very complicated if you want to get deep into the science, but without getting deep into the science, I think I can explain it clearly to your audience.
Perfect.
And the way I would explain it is that what we are doing is trying to do what many people are doing, many scientists and physicians are doing for a variety of cancers now, which is to look at ways to stimulate the body's own immune system to fight the cancer. And we can get bogged down in how we do this, but really that is what is the nature of what we're trying to do here, which is to try to determine whether the type of immunotherapy, a immunostimulatory treatment that we've been studying now for over 20 years, first when I was at the University of Pennsylvania, and now I'm at New York University, but working very closely with the team that I worked with when I was at Penn, in developing this novel form of immune stimulatory treatment. And the idea is that we believe, based upon prior studies, that the type of immune therapy that we're using in combination with chemotherapy, as well as with a drug that is a routinely available arthritis treatment, but also happens to alter the environment of the tumor to make it more susceptible to immune therapies fighting the cancer, that this combination of treatments will be better than chemotherapy alone. And so what we're trying to do is to see for patients who've been through frontline chemotherapy, and even potentially through other types of immunotherapy, and even potentially through prior surgery and radiation therapy, whether or not this type of treatment, combining immunotherapy and chemotherapy, can establish itself as a new second-line treatment for mesothelioma that can prolong survival, and we hope also improve quality of life in the process. So that's really it. There are relatively few phase 3 trials in mesothelioma, and it's worth just stepping back a second to talk about what a phase 3 trial is. A phase 1 trial is a trial where you take a drug which has never been used before in a human being, and you're trying to see for a particular disease whether that drug is safe, what the proper doses are, and are there any hints of whether it's efficacious for the patient. But really, it's a safety study to see whether or not this drug that you're administering, often for the first time to a human being, whether it's safe. A phase two trial is a trial where you're taking larger numbers of patients and you're trying to better establish whether or not, in the case of a cancer, whether or not the cancers respond to this treatment, but it doesn't just necessarily compare it to the gold standard. And in a phase three trial, you take a comparative group, typically a gold standard group, and you're comparing that to the experimental group. And the experimental group here is the immune therapy that we have been studying now for 20 years in combination with chemotherapy versus chemotherapy alone. And so that's really in a nutshell, what we're trying to accomplish. What's unique about our immunotherapy is that many other immunotherapies that are being studied are drugs that are administered intravenously in the body. They course everywhere in the body, so they go to places where there are tumor cells and places where there are not. And the goal of those immunotherapies given by vein is to try to stimulate the immune responses by essentially taking the brakes off the immune suppression that's within the tumor itself. And so there's a blockade within the tumor, and these drugs try to unleash that blockade and get rid of that blockade. But they also come at the cost of a lot of toxicity because the drugs are given everywhere, not just where the tumor is. What we're doing with our treatment is to inject a virus, a form of a cold virus, into the chest cavity of patients with mesothelioma. This cold virus has been modified so that it can't replicate itself, and by itself can't cause illness. It's not going to cause the common cold. It's been modified to deliver its cargo. The cargo in this case is a gene, a piece of genetic material, DNA, that has all the blueprints to produce something called interferon alpha. Now, we're not delivering interferon alpha to patients. We're not injecting interferon alpha into tumors. We're injecting the gene for interferon alpha using a virus to deliver that gene to tumor cells so that the tumors themselves become mini factories for interferon alpha. What we've shown in experiments dating back 20 years is that when you do this, you dramatically increase the immune response to the tumors, not only where the interferon gene is being injected, but anywhere in the body where the tumors exist. Mm-hmm. So we inject locally, but the effect is global in the entire body. And we are not injecting you with high doses of interferon, which can cause a lot of toxicity. We're injecting the gene into the tumors so the tumors themselves can produce the interferon only within the tumor itself, and then bring in the immune cells into the tumor to respond to this production of interferon, which then leads to a response to the tumors anywhere in the body. And we've also showed through a variety of experiments that the combination of this immunotherapy using the gene delivery or delivery of the interferon gene works in synergy, in combination with chemotherapy better than chemotherapy alone or better than the gene therapy alone. And so we've shown this, and we've also shown that in patients, and this was a study that we published 3 years ago, in patients who've been previously given the best available frontline chemotherapy and have not benefited from that frontline chemotherapy, that we can compare it to historical controls, double their survival by combining that chemotherapy in the second line with this immunostimulatory gene therapy. And so the goal of this trial is to build on what we showed in our previous phase two study to confirm this finding or refute the finding. We don't know as we go to larger numbers of patients to see if we can establish a new standard of care for patients who have not benefited from frontline chemotherapy and mesothelioma so we can offer them a new treatment option.
So that was a really awesome description of the trial. Thank you. I'm going to throw out some terms that we have used in some of our writing on our website. Some of the immunotherapy drugs, you mentioned that there are some types of immunotherapy that is intravenously, and it's like you said, it kind of goes for this blockade. They're checkpoint inhibitors is another word for them, correct?
That is the correct term.
Nivolumab, I think is the, I'm not sure that my pronunciation may be off, but Nivolumab, exactly. So that's one type of immunotherapy. But for this, the medical terminology, I guess, that medical experts would use for this specific trial is an adenovirus delivered interferon alpha-2B, and specifically it's RAD-IFN. Is that the exact same as TR-002? Are those interchangeable or are those separate terms?
All interchangeable. Let me give you an analogy and how these differ, but also might be complementary.
Mm-hmm.
So the current checkpoint inhibitors that are being studied in mesothelioma, none of which have been approved in the United States for the treatment of mesothelioma, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
You can imagine that when you drive a car, if you're not in a stick shift car, but you're in an automatic transmission, mm-hmm. you have two pedals.
Mm-hmm.
One is the brake pedal, and one is the accelerator pedal, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so most cancers, you can imagine that if you think about those two pedals as indicative of the immune response of the patient's immune system to their cancer, most of the time the foot is off the accelerator and pushed to the floor of the brake, which means that there is no response because the brake is on.
Mm-hmm.
And what checkpoint inhibitors do is to take your foot off the brake,
mm-hmm.
so that allows the car maybe to roll forward, mm-hmm. but in this case, it allows the immune system to respond because the brake is being released.
Mm-hmm.
The way that we differ in this type of immune therapy is that this therapy is not taking its foot off the brake, but rather pushing the foot down on the accelerator.
Mm-hmm.
You're accelerating, you're increasing the immune response against the cancer rather than releasing a brake. It may be ultimately that the best treatment would be a combination of the two, but that's not what we're studying here.
So would you describe this clinical trial as a combination of the three main emerging treatments that are being investigated for mesothelioma are immunotherapy, virotherapy, and gene therapy? This trial seems like it kind of uses all three of those elements into one treatment in a way.
To some degree, yes.
Okay.
Now, you have to be careful what you talk about by virotherapy, because virotherapy takes advantage of the ability of viruses to replicate,
mm-hmm.
and replicate selectively in some tumors. And these are non-replicatory viruses that we're using. So we're just taking advantage of the fact that viruses are pretty darn good at delivering their cargo to
exactly.
human cells. That's what they've been adapted for over tens of thousands of years. And so we're literally just using the virus as a delivery vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
We're delivering the interferon alpha gene to the tumor. Then the virus itself no longer is present after a short period of time. So we're not counting in any specific characteristic of the virus replicating to kill tumor cells or stimulate the immune response. So it is virotherapy in the sense that we're using a virus as a delivery vehicle. But the reality is this is what we would call an immunogene therapy, which is that we are delivering the genetic material for an immunostimulatory agent to the tumor to try to activate immune responses from the patient's own immune system against the cancer. So yes, we are looking at immunotherapy. We're using a virus to deliver the immunotherapy, and we are looking for it to synergize together with chemotherapy to work better than either would alone. And we're hoping to show that combination is superior to chemotherapy by itself.
How difficult is it for a mesothelioma trial? And maybe not just mesothelioma, any trial that's investigating cancer treatment to get to the phase 3 level. I mean, you see a lot of trials and they all kind of phase out after, no pun intended, phase 1 or phase 2, but phase 3 is rare. How difficult is that truly?
It's exceedingly difficult from a variety of perspectives. I'll just give you the idea that this project is the result of 25 years of work. From the time I started off in my mentor, Dr. Stephen L. Belda's laboratory at the University of Pennsylvania in 1993, 1994, to the present, it's 25 years of work, of investment of time and effort and money, of writing multiple grants to try to get funding, of reaching out to a variety of biotechnology companies to see if they would partner in this, and then getting support and encouragement from the mesothelioma research community, the patient community, and the foundations to support these efforts. And most phase one studies fizzle out, not necessarily because they're not promising, but because of the tremendous amount of an investment of time, effort, and money that needs to be put in. And oftentimes it's too hard, it's too challenging. Mm-hmm. People don't have the perseverance, or they move on to the next great thing, and there's always a great thing that's down the road, and an idea that may have worked if you persevered is left in the wayside. Mm-hmm. So is exceedingly challenging, and not to mention expensive. And so this only works really with academic industry partnerships. Mm-hmm. You can develop phase one trials and sometimes phase two trials through, in the United States, through grant funding from the National Cancer Institute, which is what we did at the University of Pennsylvania for many years. But to get to a phase three trial involving over 55 hospitals at multiple countries throughout the world, United Kingdom, Europe, Russia, Australia, United States, Canada, perhaps Asia, it requires a huge resource that's beyond what most academic institutions can accomplish on their own. And so it really necessitates having this partnership and having the right partner who believes in what you're doing, believes in the novel agent, and is willing to design a trial that is successful. So this trial, we've started the discussions about this trial over 4 years ago. We were at the FDA approximately 2 years ago. The protocol design and modifications took over a year and a half, and from that time point, from meeting with the FDA until the launch this spring of the international trial. And even then, to get the trial activated at multiple sites, get approval by all the agencies, and this requires approval from multiple different agencies at each academic institution. It's only now, this month, that the first patient will be treated, likely in Glasgow, Scotland, by one of our key centers in the United Kingdom. So it's incredibly daunting, but also exciting, because I've dedicated almost half my life to this project. And to see it get to this point, again, I have no idea whether the trial is going to be what we would call a positive trial or not, meaning that this combination of immunogene therapy and chemotherapy will prove successful compared to chemotherapy alone and establish a new treatment for mesothelioma. We hope that that's the case. I can't predict it. But to get to this point where we're able to answer the question is incredibly exciting.
I don't want you to look too far ahead or to even jinx yourself and jinx the clinical trial. I know there's a fourth phase in the clinical trial process and in the FDA approval process. What is involved in the fourth phase? And is, once you get to that, is it kind of downhill from there in terms of getting approval? I mean, is the hard work mostly done? Is the work to prove that this is a viable treatment option mostly accomplished at that point?
Well, if you finish a phase three clinical trial and you have a positive result, mm-hmm. the hard work's been done. The fourth phase is then to go back to the FDA to get them to approve the drug. So you mm-hmm. could have a positive study, but it may not be positive enough to warrant FDA approval for a specific indication.
Oh, wow.
So that's not necessarily a fourth phase, but it is the next phase after the phase three trial, which is you take your results, you go to the FDA, you go to what's called the panel, and the panel makes a recommendation as to whether the drug should be approved or not.
Okay.
And the panel looks at a variety of things. They look at how much difference you see between the two groups in your research study. Then you look at the toxicity, what are the side effects, the complications, were there deaths from the experimental drug that are of concern? And they look upon the impact upon the disease. And lastly, I think they do have some insight into whether this is a cost-effective intervention or not. Many of the gene-based therapies, including cellular therapies that are being approved now, are very expensive, but frankly, so are the current checkpoint inhibitors, which are somewhere in the range of $120,000 per year mm-hmm. or more. And so I think cancer treatments are expensive, but for a disease like mesothelioma that has a median survival of somewhere between 8 and 16 months, we need to find new treatments to be able to improve the quality and the quantity of life for these patients who are so deserving.
What led you to specializing in mesothelioma? Was that an early career conscious decision? Like, I want to, you know, focus at least a good chunk of my research on this disease and helping people? Or is this more of like it kind of just led this way naturally?
I don't know if it would be either. It was, like many things in life, serendipity. It's being at the right place with the right people at the right time. And I consider myself incredibly lucky that I was not a science major in college. My major was in history, Russian history.
Oh, wow.
I had minimal research background prior to and during medical school. Very little laboratory research background, and I happened to be taken under the wing by a brilliant scientist, Dr. El Belda, who was transitioning his laboratory from a true, very scientific, basic laboratory to one that was more translational, focused on development of new treatments. And it just happened to be that we had this nexus between a brilliant thoracic surgeon, a brilliant pulmonary scientist, who put together a laboratory that was focused on new treatments. This was a time in the early 1990s where gene therapies were being developed and studied for a variety of diseases. We had thought that gene therapy might be something that would be beneficial to mesothelioma, which essentially at that time there were no approved treatments. This was prior to the approval of pemetrexed mm-hmm. and was considered a death sentence. And so we basically, I can't say we, I was merely the junior person who was allowed to work, but my mentors put together a disease for which treatments were desperately needed and a new treatment that seemed exciting but was very unproven. And I came into that laboratory at that time, at that exciting nexus. And the great thing for me is that I've worked together with that laboratory and with my mentors for the past 25 years, and I'm still working with them now and hopefully in the future together on this trial and future iterations of other similar trials. And so I think that a lot of success in whatever you do in life, and it's certainly true in medicine, is who takes you under your wing, who's your mentor, what is the project, do you happen to be in the right place at the right time with an exciting new treatment that not too many people know about and you have a chance to get in on the ground floor. For me, mesothelioma was not just a disease that warranted new treatment, but I learned so much about the people who have the disease. The fact that these are salt of the earth people, people who work with their hands, never ask for anything for themselves, only cared about really their families, working hard, making a living, and didn't ask to be exposed to asbestos during the course of their occupation. And at a time when most of them wanted to just retire and enjoy life, were hit with this lightning bolt of a horrendous diagnosis that was often one that threatened their lives. And so the opportunity to work together with those patients and families and to try to do something to help them, and even if it took 20 to 25 years to get to this point, it's been worthwhile. And I have to mention all of those patients and families who, you know, were altruistic and contributed in every possible way to the conduct of the studies that we did at Penn and now at NYU, to enroll in the previous clinical trials when the chances for clinical benefit may have been small and the risks may have been high. Where we are today is not just a testament to the scientists who helped develop the treatment, but those patients and families who sacrificed so much to even just participate in these trials.
We always say, or I say a lot in my writing, that it's important for, you know, people who participate in these clinical trials, not only are they giving themselves a chance to be treated with new emerging options, but they're also just helping science progress, right? Like, even if this doesn't work, they're helping science progress. They are being unselfish by likely saving lives in the future because of their participation, because they sacrifice themselves, themselves out there.
There is no question that that's the case. And most importantly, although people obviously want to help themselves and help themselves live longer and have hopes for a cure, what we tell patients when they enroll in clinical trials, especially early phase clinical trials, is even if they're not helping themselves, they're helping other people in the future. Mm-hmm. And if we do find a cure for mesothelioma, it's going to be because of all the people who came before those who will receive the cure, who tried those experimental therapies, who went through the hardships of going through the clinical trials, who took that uncertainty and took that risk so they could help others in the future. And it really is a great paradigm, because these are people who often work on in challenging environments. You know, you're working on a battleship during or after World War II. You're a pipe fitter working in dangerous situations. You're an electrician. You're working as a team, as a group. You count on each other. And there's something that really makes sense about people being there for each other, not just when they're in their working days, but in their days after they finish working, when they're going through a disease and looking out for their brother or their sister who was working with them on the line, on the job.
So for this clinical trial, we can segue from this discussion about the importance of patient enrollment to, I believe, and I've read, and correct me if I'm wrong, you are enrolling patients for the phase three portion of your clinical trial. How many patients are you looking for? Which hospitals or institutions are participating? I'm not sure if you know the list off the top of your head. And are there any specific qualifications that you're looking for among pleural mesothelioma patients? I know you mentioned a little bit that patients who have undergone chemotherapy before, but I'm not sure if there are any other specific qualifications or anything that would remove someone from being able to participate.
Absolutely. We don't have the capacity here to go over all the inclusion and exclusion criteria study, but let me just reiterate, this is an international phase three trial, truly international, multiple countries, multiple continents, over 11 centers in the United States, four or five of which I believe are currently active right now with more each day. Centers include, but are not limited to, NYU, UCLA, University of Maryland, University of Kansas, University of Toledo, Northeast Ohio's medical centers. These are just some of the few that are active in the United States, but many others in the process of becoming active. We have several centers in Canada, and as I mentioned, centers throughout the United Kingdom, including in England and in Scotland, centers throughout Europe, including Russia, and centers in Australia, primarily in Melbourne and Sydney and Brisbane. And we may be adding sites in Asia, in China, and Japan in the future. The goal is to have sites that are relatively near where the patients are. These are typically major academic medical centers and typically centers that see a number of mesothelioma patients per year. And so the investigators are experienced in diagnosing and treating this disease, which is, I think, very important. The investigators may or may not have experience with this type of gene therapy, but they are being instructed at every step along the way in terms of what they need to know in terms of administering this type of novel treatment. The major inclusion criteria is that this is what's called a second or third line therapy, meaning patients who are in the study have to have received the best available chemotherapy. That would be the drug pemetrexed, also known as Alimta, A-L-I-M-T-A, and typically in combination with another drug, most usually in the United States, cisplatin or carboplatin. And they have to have received this drug and at some point have evidence of disease progression after getting this initial, what's called frontline chemotherapy regimen. Now, they could have had chemotherapy, this chemotherapy up front with surgery. They could have had it with radiation therapy or some combination of all three, but have evidence of then progressing. Patients also could have received another type of immunotherapy as part of a clinical trial, since none are approved, at least in the United States, for use in mesothelioma. So receiving a checkpoint inhibitor does not prevent you from being eligible for this study. And again, I talked about why, because the mechanism of action is different, mm-hmm. one taking the foot off the brake, wanting to put in the foot in the accelerator, that it makes sense that if you had another type of checkpoint inhibitor immunotherapy and you didn't benefit, you might still benefit from what we're doing with our immunogene therapy. Mm-hmm. And you could also get another form of chemotherapy other than the one that we're giving in this study. So we're giving gemcitabine. So if you've received gemcitabine previously, which is a routinely utilized second line or third line chemotherapy, you would be ineligible for our study if you've already received or are currently receiving gemcitabine. Mm-hmm. The other criteria that's important is the subtype of mesothelioma. This trial is predominantly for the epithelioid subtype of mesothelioma, which is about 60% of all mesotheliomas, at least in the United States. We also allow patients who have what's called the biphasic or the mixed cellular type, as long as that biphasic type or mixed type is predominantly epithelioid. Those patients who have sarcomatoid mesotheliomas and those patients who have the mixed type with a predominant sarcomatoid phenotype are not eligible for the study, because in our earlier trials, we did not see any significant benefit of this treatment in that patient population. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Sturman, thank you so much for talking about the clinical trial and for talking about your experience investigating new treatments for mesothelioma. It was really enlightening conversation, and it's really promising to see, again, to see a clinical trial reach phase three, and with the exciting and positive results from phase one and phase two, considering how limited the treatment options are right now for this disease. And I'm not sure if you wanted to finish and say anything else. I know, of course, you're obviously very busy, but if you wanted to sign off and say anything else about this trial or about your experience treating mesothelioma, or about, you know, meso treatment in general and how it's evolved and how it is evolving and where it's headed, you know, I open floor for you.
Yeah, I just want to thank you again for allowing me to speak to you and to your audience today. And if anyone wants to reach out to me, they can look me up on the NYU website or through the trial website, which is on clinicaltrials.gov, and shoot me an email if you have any questions regarding the study or your potential eligibility. I'm unfortunately available 24/7, 365 to answer any questions regarding the study. But I do want to just emphasize to the mesothelioma community, the patients and the families, the caregivers that are out there, that it's rare that we get to the point of a phase three trial. And it's extremely important, whether this immunogen therapy proves effective or not, that we support these trials, that we enroll in the trials and participate in the trials, because it's the only way that we get answers. We are not going to make advancements unless we can get successful phase three trials completed and get the definitive answers we need to know as to whether treatments are beneficial or not. And so if we have phase three trials out there, whether they're here in the United States or outside the United States, we have to do our best to support them. And I'm not talking about financially, I'm talking about supporting them by participating if you're eligible, and contributing to advancement of science, contributing to the benefit of yourself and other mesothelioma patients to come in the future. And I'm incredibly grateful, as I said, for all of the relationships that I've had with patients and families and caregivers who have supported our programs at the University of Pennsylvania, here at NYU, and have supported all the clinical trials to date. And this would not be happening without all of you. So thank you again for your time, and thank you to the audience for listening.
Agree with everything you said. And, you know, again, thank you to the audience for listening, and thank you to everyone who's devoted their time and who has been unselfish with their time and helping advance mesothelioma treatment. And again, Dr. Sturman, thank you so much for joining us.